This is an MUT Radio podcast.
It was Autism Awareness Day. But because we're not here, we're a little bit off. We decided we're still going to touch on it because it's a very important day to touch on. And today we are joined by Jesse Ann Bird, who is from the Neurodiversity Center here in KZN, who's going to be joining us live right here on MET Radio as we are touching on autism. And she is a psychologist, so she's joining us live right now on MET Radio. Hello.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you very much. We really appreciate it. I'm confused. I want to say miss. I want to say missus. I'm still stuck there. But are you good?
I am good. I'm so sorry. The audio coming through is a bit unclear.
Oh, okay. How about now?
We'll go with it.
All right. Thank you very much. But firstly, thank you very much for joining us on ABUT Radio. I know you must have a lot on your plate.
We do, and I think your topic today around autism awareness is so, so important, and I'm actually just so grateful to be a part of it.
Yes, we are so grateful as well, and thank you very much again for joining us. And we know you have so many commitments, so we're just going to just get straight into it. Because most people will be confused as to when we're speaking about autism, what are we actually speaking about? Maybe if you could highlight that for us.
And I think it's a very good starting point, because with awareness, we actually need to know what are we talking about when we're talking about autism. And with autism, what we want to think about is we're talking about neurodevelopmental differences, differences that, very broadly speaking, present in, well, differences in social communication and differences in what we would call restrictive and repetitive behavior. And so really, it's about how people move through the world, how they process information, how they interact with others, how they are able to respond when the world becomes unpredictable or when there's change that wasn't expected.
Wow, that is very insightful. Thank you very much. But now, you also touched on another word, which is neurodiversity. Maybe if you could take us through, what does that actually mean so students could understand clearly?
And it's a bit of a buzzword at the moment, isn't it? So everybody's talking about neurodiversity. But what it really speaks to is this idea that our brains develop differently. We're all different. We are all neurodiverse in that we all have different ways of seeing the world, different ways of experiencing the world, different ways of processing information. And what we then think about is that at certain points we will get to enough difference that we will experience someone as being neurodivergent. And so when we speak about neurodivergence, we're talking about a level of difference that might include conditions like our autism spectrum conditions, our ADHDs, our learning difficulties, our developmental differences, differences with things like sensory integration as well. And so what we're thinking about is we are honoring and respecting the fact that all of our brains have developed uniquely and beautifully and differently. And that for many of us, our brains have developed in ways which require specific accommodations so that we're able to flourish and live according to our strengths.
This is very insightful. Now, I know most people refer to autism as a spectrum. Maybe if you could take us through that, but why is it referred to as a spectrum?
So when we talk about it being a spectrum, what we are really talking about is the amount of diversity within the condition of autism itself. Autism presents in many, many different ways. It's not a single fixed profile. Something you'll often hear people at the neurodiversity say is if you know one person with autism, you know one person with autism. And so what we want to highlight here is that the way someone's autism presents can be as unique as the rest of their personality, that their strengths as well as their support needs will differ greatly from one person to another. And so this means that to the external person, we would often talk about our different classifications. So we might use words like mild or moderate. But what we really are wanting to highlight is that every single person with autism will have different needs, but they will also have different abilities and gifts and strengths. And we want to acknowledge those as well.
Now, We are a campus radio station, so mostly we deal with students. And because it leads me to my next question, because I want to know, maybe can someone reach university age without knowing that they are on the autism spectrum?
Absolutely. I mean, in fact, one of the, I think, fastest growing areas that we're seeing in terms of people coming and requesting their own diagnostic processes would be young adults. Mm. One of the things we know is that with certain presentations of autism, we see what we would call high levels of masking, where individuals who are often, you know, bright, intelligent, they have an awareness of their own differences, but they mask these and they compensate for these differences, especially the social differences, so that outwardly one doesn't really notice. But inwardly, we often hear reports of heightened anxiety, difficulty managing change. And so at adult level, someone might hear a talk, they might know of somebody else who's been diagnosed, they might start to, you know, put the pieces together themselves. And so we are in fact seeing a large number of young adults approaching for diagnosis, and it's absolutely possible. And I think for people who are diagnosed when they are older, it can be incredibly freeing, helping them understand why things have always felt that little bit different for them.
Wow, that is amazing. You also speak on having like there is a lower spectrum and also there is a higher spectrum, because now I want us to get into maybe what are the, because it's different, maybe what are the common signs that people should look for to maybe say or maybe tell if someone is autistic or is living with autism, just for people who do not know about it.
So, I mean, although it shows up differently, there are some common patterns that we tend to see. So we might see communication differences, and this could be somebody who, you know, when they were younger or a child might have had delayed speech. Interestingly, we also sometimes see people with very advanced language, you know, who develop language very, very early and very, very quickly. But what we're talking about is we're talking about a difference in how communication may have developed. We often would also want to look at things like difficulty with things like back and forth conversation. So for some people, using language might be difficult, but for others, they might be very good at using language, but things like turn-taking and conversation, you know, knowing when it's somebody else's turn to speak, or being able to keep up in a group context, or, you know, needing to sort of quite consciously remind themselves to ask other people questions, so that they don't come across as being too overbearing. You know, those are some of the sort of qualitative differences we might see in communication. We also would look for sort of differences in social interactions. So some people might be very socially interested and socially motivated, so they might desperately want to be part of, you know, a social crowd or have friends, but have very real difficulty with maintaining friendships. Others might have a lot less social engagement and might not need as much social interaction. What we also might find would be difficulty with reading social cues. Some people have got very specific difficulty with doing things like reading the nonverbal social cues, like body language. And so what we often hear, especially around young adults like your students, yeah, is this idea of people who want connection but don't know how to navigate it, or once they have that connection, find it really difficult to maintain it. We also would look for things like repetitive behaviors and strong interests. So, you know, things like intense interests in specific topics, with difficulty with diverting off their topic when they're engaged in conversation. Also things like an enjoyment of repetition, so specifically wanting a specific routine and done things in a certain way. Sometimes having a repetitive phrase or a catchphrase that might get used in conversation quite a lot. And also things like some people might use things like repetitive movements. These can be quite subtle, like little repetitive finger movements or ways of sort of moving one's mouth or face. With children, sometimes those movements can be a little bit more noticeable with things like you know, hand slapping or rocking. And then many people who are neurodivergent will also report sort of sensory sensitivities. So being either over or under sensitive to things like noise or texture or lights or smells. And so on a sensory level, you know, it's this idea that things that might feel very manageable to one person can feel quite overwhelming to another person. And then we think about that need for routine and predictability. And, yeah, that difficulty with sudden change, preferring sameness, yeah, that some people you'll know will, yeah, they'll order the same meal every time they go to a restaurant with the same drink, you know, or, you know, Monday night might be, you know, their pizza night, and it's the same pizza on every Monday night. Yeah, because what we find is that with many neurodivergent individuals is that that predictability helps reduce the anxiety and it makes the world feel more manageable. And the idea is it's not that we're looking for sort of one or two signs. Mm. We're looking about patterns across these areas over time. And we would want to see that these patterns have been present from early on in the developmental period, so in childhood, and continuing throughout adulthood, although the way the patterns present may change.
Mm. That is very insightful. That was a lot to unpack right there. But also, we were just speaking about the signs. Surely now I'm a parent or I'm a friend. I can see the sign. Let's say I'm a parent in this case. I can see the sign, but I cannot say my child actually has autism. So where can I go to get my child diagnosed or to check?
Yeah. And I think this is where, you know, if something feels like it's consistently difficult or consistently challenging, you know, this is where we really want to think about what it is that we need to do to provide support. And I think accurate diagnosis is such an important part of support. And, you know, people would be very, very welcome to approach us at the Neurodiversity Centre directly for assistance. We work with people across the age range. You know, we work with children, we work with adults. Yeah, we work with everybody in between as well.
That is very insightful. Now, I don't want to keep you long, but there are some misconceptions that people have about people living with autism. Maybe if you could take us through some of those.
Tell you what, why don't you give me one misconception and we can unpack that one?
I've heard one that they are sensitive to sunlight or they don't like being shouted at. I don't know if it's true or if it's not.
Well, if we think about the sensory differences, many people, you know, have what we call auditory sensitivity, where sound is experienced as being more acute or more intense. And so being shouted at from a sensory level can feel incredibly distressing. Mm. And also being shouted at, nobody really likes that. You know, I think that's a pretty common experience. But also things like sunlight, bright lights, again, that can speak into that sensory difference where bright lights can be experienced as too bright. Mm. This won't be true for every neurodivergent person, and just having sensory differences won't necessarily mean that a person will have a diagnosis of an autism spectrum condition. But I would want to look at is it causing distress, and does it fit in with the larger pattern of differences that we've described?
Very insightful. Now, we could talk on and on and on all day, but we don't want to keep you very long. Maybe any message that you would like to pass along to our students?
I think what I would really like to leave it with is, you know, to appreciate those differences, appreciate the fact that everybody's brain has developed differently. And if one does feel that something is causing you more difficulty or more distress than it should be, to reach out for help.
Yeah, thank you very much. But one last thing, when people want to get a hold of you or get a hold of the center, how can they do that?
I suggest just popping straight onto our website, the neurodiversitycentre.co.za, and there are a range of contact options there if they want to reach out.
Oh, thank you very much. And thank you very much for giving us some of your time. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
This is an MUT Radio podcast.